Welcome to Clarity Fund Podcast. This is episode 3. I'm Dr. Owen Anderson. I'm the research director here at Clarity Fund, and I'm joined by Greg Goodrich.
Hi.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Owen.
And we're talking about the knowledge of God. Our highest goal is to know God. And one of the things that we're doing at Clarity Fund is responding to objections and criticisms about the knowledge of God.
Yeah.
So, for example, someone might just say, there is no God altogether. I don't believe in God at all. Someone else might say, I believe in God, but as you begin to talk with them about what they mean by God, you see, well, this is not the eternal power and divine nature of God at all. This is something different. So we're handling both of those.
Yeah.
But also, even before those two, which are about God, is the idea of knowledge, that we can know God. So there's what we know, what is God, but then there's what does it mean to know anything at all? And I think you and I both have done work in our philosophy days, both in our graduate work and in our teaching, on that idea of knowledge.
Yeah.
What does it mean to know things? Do you know anything, Greg?
I think so.
You know?
Do I know that I know?
Yeah, that, I'm glad you said that, because I was reading a well-known Christian philosopher recently who said, you don't need to know something, you don't need to show you know it. Those are two separate things. There's the knowing and there's the showing. Now, you could give some examples where that's true, and a lot of times those are empirical examples. So, for example, someone might say, I know how to ride a bike, but I couldn't write a book about how to ride a bike.
Yeah.
Or I know how to play basketball. And many times the best players are the not very good coaches. They can't show you how. So there's the knowing and the showing. That those are knowing how to do things. And then there could also be examples that are knowledge by acquaintance. Like, I know Greg Goodrich, but if you weren't in the room and I was asked to draw you, besides the fact that I don't have artistic skills, my memory may not be as good. And or if I was to write out a bio of you, right, that's different than the facial recognition of you when you come in the room, and I can pick you out from different people. So there's knowledge by acquaintance. And someone, especially when we talk about the knowledge of God, someone might especially be thinking of that one. Like, I know God by acquaintance, but I don't have this other kind of thing that requires me to show it.
So you were just talking about knowledge by acquaintance. We learn things. Maybe are we talking about learning as coming to know? If it's by instinct or if it's by perception, is that the same thing as coming to know that we know something? And I, although we do use knowledge in these various ways, I think we're talking about something quite different when we talk about whether or not we know God.
We don't know him
by perception through mystical experience, nothing like that. It's through what it is to be human, something more specific that wouldn't maybe be shared by animals. Animals do things according to instinct or perception. Humans are coming to know by inference, know by reason.
So maybe we can use some of those examples, because the word know is ambiguous, and it's used in those different ways. And so that's part of what we do in philosophy, is to clarify clarity. There's these clear, clearly different meanings. And so it's interesting, the skeptic who might object and say nothing's clear might still want to use these distinctions, right, which are clear distinctions. And so we can at least make note of them and say, yeah, there are those things. But when it's been applied, it was once said to me this way. I asked a well-known philosopher that question of, look, different people have religious experiences that they use to then back up their beliefs about God. But they're leading these religious experiences, which in some ways are the same experience, are leading to very different beliefs of God. So they can't all be true. And what he told me was, well, it's like you have five bottles, and four of them are filled with poison, but one of them isn't. The fact that four of them are filled with poison doesn't make the fifth one poisonous. It's still good water. Now, that's true, but it doesn't help me with my problem. My problem was, well, how do I know which of the five to drink out of? And so that's the problem that gets us past knowing but not showing. Any of those kinds of knowledge can be challenged when someone says, I don't think you really know how to ride a bike. We hop on the bike, or someone says, you don't know Greg Goodrich. Well, I'll point you out. Or you don't know God. And they give objections to belief in God. And they say, God does not exist because you believe God is a spirit, but only matter exists. So there is no God. So that's when the showing comes up. And it doesn't just have to be in reference to others, right? So you know, you can move to an island all by yourself and never have to respond to objections from others, mm-hmm. but you have your own objections insofar as you're thoughtful.
Yeah, right.
That come up in your mind. You say, well, how do I really know this?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so in this, harking back to something we were talking about in a prior episode, whether our listeners are listening to those or not, we can think about faith as understanding, and how is it that we could relate faith to, well, the fear of the Lord may have come up, but also how is it that faith relating to understanding grasps the meaning of life or the meaning of things?
Yeah.
Can I simply say, well, I accidentally got the bottle right, right? Everybody else is dead, yeah. but I got the bottle right. How can I ever confirm that? Well, everybody else is dead, right? So when, you know, everyone is walking around and seeming to go through life without much trouble, well, how is that person to discern, oh, I got it right? How do they know that they know?
Yeah.
Is that...
Yeah, it's distinguishing between knowledge and opinions. Mm-hmm. And opinions could be true or they could be false.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll use the word beliefs also. Belief and opinion are very similar. And so you say, well, look, I have an opinion and it happened to be true. That's enough for me.
Yeah.
But how did you know it was true? And so then once you have that knowledge, you have a certainty connected with it. Certainty is from the word certitude or certify.
Yeah.
So if someone's certified, like you go to a dentist and they're certified, they're a real dentist, not mm-hmm. a counterfeit dentist or any such practice, right? When you have certification, you've gotten to reality. It's the real thing.
Yeah.
And so knowledge gets us to what is real. And so when we're asking, do I know God? We're asking, is God real? Or do I just have opinions about a fantasy, about wishful thinking that I've invented or my culture has invented?
Right, yeah.
And how do I get to reality? So knowledge, we want to know what is real. And then we want to know what is real in order to choose what is good.
Yeah.
So all three of these concepts we talk about, the technical terms are epistemology, which studies how do I know, and metaphysics, which studies what is real, and ethics, which studies what is good. They're all ordered in that mm-hmm. way. I want to know what is real so I can choose what is good.
Mm-hmm.
And here we're talking about knowing God, and someone will object and say, what you think is God is wish fulfillment, it's infantile projection, it's a fantasy, and... therefore, just a matter of opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of people have fantasies. Your opinion is not better than their opinion.
Yeah.
And we're suggesting, no, God is real, and we can and should know God.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, our highest good and enjoyment and fulfillment is in knowing God.
Yeah.
So because of that, we have these obligations then to respond to these criticisms.
Yeah. It could maybe seem daunting, though, right? If we look at all of the various claims to God, even maybe within one specific faith, you have maybe within one church or one mosque, various, you begin to ask these persons, what do you mean by God? And maybe you get a diverse expression of what they mean by God. And so how is it that we sort through this? If faith is meaningful, it seems that in order to approach the truth, we're going to have to get to, well, what is meant?
Yeah.
And so if we can say, well, at least this much, that God is creator. That's something you were mentioning mm-hmm. before. If God is creator, that distinction is going to hold in all cases. So can we know that there's a distinction between the creator and the creature, or between the creation? So then if that's what's meant, we're not necessarily saying at this point that would be, we jump and say, oh, that's true and all other views are false. But through the meaning of this position, we can then approach, well, what are the alternatives to that? What are the alternatives to creator? Well, maybe all is matter, matter's eternal. And so if the person who believes in God is concerned with, that is, maybe a person says, well, it doesn't seem clear to me that God exists. Well, if I believe in God, is it clear to me? And if it's clear to me, it seems that I would be able to give an account for, the heavens or the material world is not eternal.
Yeah.
At least that much, because God is eternal. And so can we really get to saying whether or not that's true, that's what's meant, and can I defend that?
Well, that's really one of the first things that philosophy does, is asks, what do you mean?
Yeah.
So people can get quite far down a road of an argument, and you realize we've meant different things by our key terms the whole time. It would have been nice to have cleared that up at the beginning.
Yeah.
So before we ask which view is true, we can ask, what does each of them mean? So what is meant by God? And we've said, at least this, the eternal power and divine nature of God, taking that from Romans 1. Only God is eternal. And especially this, the eternal power and then divine nature. God is both creator and redeemer.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we're getting uniquely into the teachings of Christianity.
Yeah.
And specifically what God is like in terms of God's justice and mercy and how those work out in the redemptive work of Christ for us. But getting back to knowing God, you're emphasizing this important point, which is that we need to know what we mean. And that's what we're doing. We've been doing so far this episode is asking, what do you mean by the word know?
Yeah, good.
And someone could say, I just know that my team will win the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Or I just know. And really what they're saying is, I'm strongly convicted. And something you said, remind me that you said, it's clear to me.
Mm-hmm.
So someone could say, look, it's clear to me that this political party's right. And we can sort of analyze that or deconstruct that by saying what that means when you say it's clear to me that, you're saying, given my assumptions, this follows. And so what we're doing is looking back, well, are these assumptions true? What do they even mean?
But that's very uncomfortable.
Why?
To then go back and ask, what do I mean? Are these assumptions justified?
It requires a certain amount of the philosophical humility we've taught about.
Yeah.
But
so that might exist among those who believe in God just as much as those who don't believe in God, whether or not we have the integrity to go back and do that thinking of distinguishing God from his creation.
Well, and that thinking about ourselves to recognize my human tendency towards pride and error is such that I'll think I know when I don't know, and I'll resist being questioned.
Yeah.
And so philosophy begins with self-examination of not someone else having to do that, but I should do that myself.
Yeah.
I should examine my own assumptions. But back to the idea of know. What does it take to know God? And one reason why someone might say know does not require show is that this is too difficult. The average ordinary believer is not able to do some of these philosophical gymnastics. They have to be involved in real important parts of life and don't have the free time that you have to sit around learning this stuff. And so certainly God can't be inaccessible to them. So the knowledge of God must be something that doesn't require that kind of stuff. In other words, when they hear us say knowing God requires showing, requires proof, they're thinking some kind of advanced philosophical proof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's one of the resistances to say, no, the ordinary believer knows God.
Yeah. Yeah. So do we need meaning? And maybe you'd say that would be the purpose of church. So even though we might not all have positions where we're thinking about these ideas at this level all the time, the purpose of being in a community where others are trained and given the tools in order to help you come to understand these things. Mm-hmm. You initially may assent to it. You may see the distinction, but now it's going to be very important as you go through the trials of life to be able to continue to affirm that distinction that God is God, I am not, I'm going through this situation. Now, how does God relate to that situation, this very difficult trial? And if we've sort of segmented our life off from that work and said, well, that's just for, you know, those that do that sort of work, and then they can believe that. They can tell me what to believe.
Yeah.
That might...
The experts know.
Yeah. Are they going to carry me through the trial?
Right, yeah, so that's a question.
Might be an issue.
Yeah, so if I'm mostly believing experts, say Christian philosophers have worked on this stuff, they've told me, don't worry, God does exist, and that's good enough for me. But you're right, you're getting to the point where life will press you and ask you, how do you know?
Mm-hmm.
And especially it is the trials that the problem of evil makes people say, I don't know if God is there. He seems distant or hidden, the hiddenness of God.
I don't know that Job was a philosopher, was he?
No, I don't think it says anything about that, but he's a good example. Or any other person in the scriptures are good examples of going through those trials of faith, which then do press us in our understanding, which we've said is related to faith. Our faith grows as our understanding grows. And at the time when you should be teachers, you don't know fundamental things, first principles. And so that seems to say everybody should know first principles, basic things. So philosophy is not when you've memorized the Latin arguments of scholastics and you can repeat them. Philosophy, in the sense that we're doing it, is something for everybody.
Yeah.
Everyone should have these foundational pieces in their life in place, understand them, both so that they're able to weather storms, the storms of life, but also so that they're able to go on and demolish arguments that raise themselves up against the knowledge of God. 2 mm-hmm. Corinthians 10:5 is not just for a few people.
Mm-hmm.
It's for any believer. You should be able to do that.
Yeah.
But all of those still, those are still utility things. I want to come back to why knowledge, in other words, those are things that are focused on the action, the outcome of knowledge. I can do this stuff. But why is knowledge more than just a true opinion?
Mm-hmm.
When we're talking about knowledge, as I said earlier, we're trying to get to reality. What is real? Is what I have real, or just an appearance, just a fantasy, just an opinion? And so when we have knowledge, we're coming to distinguish real and not real.
Right.
Existing and not existing. Correct or incorrect. And so that's true in any case. And if I don't know that for myself, if I can't even show myself the difference between those things,
mm-hmm.
it'd be hard to say I know anything.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know the difference between my kids and not kids.
Mm-hmm.
You pick up the wrong kids after school.
Yeah.
In what sense do you know your kids then? So that's true about knowing God as well. And that's involved in the showing part.
Mm-hmm.
So someone might analyze this from a kind of external position, sometimes called externalism, and say, look, the subject we're talking about is going through all the right practices and has all the right belief formation, even though if you ask them a question, they couldn't tell you how they came to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. I'm not sure, because of what you brought up, that someone could do that, because when the trials of life come up, then you begin to ask questions of why.
Yeah.
But that doesn't help us with knowing, how do I know the external position or evaluation is true?
Mm-hmm.
So that externalism immediately still devolves into what they call internalism, of me asking, how do I know? And that's true about externalism. How do I know externalism is true? But it's also true about the beliefs in question.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this immediately occurring belief that God is real, and maybe God put it there, but maybe the government put something in my water and makes me believe God is real.
Right.
Because I'm more compliant or something, you know, some yeah. story like that.
Yeah.
So how do I really know that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where skepticism comes in, where they could say, no one can really know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've suggested, no, you can know basic things, especially by using the laws of reason,
mm-hmm.
the law of non-contradiction. We can show that if something ends up in a contradiction, it can't be true.
Right.
And so if it contradicts itself, it's called self-refuting, or a self-referentially absurd argument. Like saying, I don't think I can think. You don't need to refute that person. They've refuted themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And so those are proofs to show knowledge is possible in the sense that we're talking about, which someone might call a very strong sense. They might say, oh, you two, you're talking about a kind of knowledge which is so rare. Most mm-hmm. of the things we talk about in life, we don't have that kind of knowledge for.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you be okay with that if you don't know very many things?
Yeah, I think so. I can't have certainty about whether the plane is going to crash.
Future events or the weather.
Yeah, yeah. And we might even question, you know, the sensory material world, right? We might say, well, how do I know cause? Well, we can think about that separate from the world, but the world, I may not know whether or not if I hit this bottle, is it going to fall?
That's a good example, too, because that's one of the things I might... Someone was called a common sense realist
mm-hmm.
might critique you, Greg, mm-hmm. and say... You're doing this weird philosophy stuff where you doubt the material world. Yeah. No one does that. And they know there's a table in front of them. They don't mm-hmm. have to give some kind of convoluted argument to prove there's a table in front of them. They just know it.
Yeah.
And so you've worked yourself into this weird corner that only a few philosophers find themselves in, where you think you need proof for the material world's existence.
Yeah, I have.
Right? Well, usually the person saying that is only aware of a very small slice of philosophy.
Yeah.
Because it's been an important part of world philosophies
yeah.
to raise questions about the nature of the material world. Is it an illusion or not?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're only aware maybe of a small slice of some modern philosophy, then you'll think, here's my hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's sufficient to prove there's a material world.
Right. Yeah.
But you haven't dealt with some important objections, both within the West and in the East.
Yeah.
And that there's a world that's not the same as me is one thing. But what the nature of that world is,
mm-hmm.
is where it gets contentious. So even if someone was to say, yeah, everyone goes around acting as if there's a world that's not the same as their own mind,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, lots of people do that. But what do they think it is? That's a lot of, if you were to interview them, they would have all kinds of different weird answers.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
People do doubt that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So all that's to say, this charge that only a few weird philosophers go around doing that is simply not true. We do want to have knowledge, and we want to know that there is a world that exists outside of our mind, and that it was created by God. Mm-hmm. It's not eternal.
Right.
Those two pieces. And we can give arguments to show those things.
Yeah.
We don't simply have to believe them.
Right. Yeah.
Now, let me ask this question about, because it's related to that. Simply believing them raises a question about culpability. If there's just a bunch of traditions, and they all have some good things going for them and some bad things going for them, and you should pick one and go with it. Pick one, and integrity means just pick one and be consistent with what you picked.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't actually know which of them is reflecting reality. And then you die, and it turns out you picked the wrong one, and you're held accountable for that.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be unfair.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah,
it's following this principle that the law must be knowable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a basic principle of law.
Yeah, guilt would be attributed to the guilty party on the basis that they should have known and not acted against it.
It has to be knowable, and the law has to be knowable, and it has to be published, which doesn't simply mean there's a book somewhere called the law. It means made known. Mm-hmm. It's knowable, and it was made known to you. So, for example, the natural law is published in the works of creation.
Right.
You can know them.
Yeah.
And the civil law is published equally well. That's what a speed limit sign is, a publication of the law of speeding.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there is responsibility, there must be knowledge. Knowledge must be possible.
Yeah.
And if knowledge is not possible, there's only opinions, then there could be no responsibility of that kind.
Right, yeah.
Now, I think that's an intuition that leads a lot of people to a kind of universalism,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Where they would say, obviously, that shows that as long as you're consistent within your tradition, you'll be rewarded. You've been accepted.
Yeah, which is saying it's either very difficult to know God or it's entirely impossible.
Yeah.
So if it's the case that God is clearly revealed by the heavens above and the moral law within, then we might, in fact, see that in Scripture. And we look at Psalm 19 as an example. You see that with the sun, its heat, the rays going everywhere. You can't hide from the heat of the sun. And in Romans 3, you see Romans 2, you see this law is there in the heart of the Gentiles. And then in Romans 3, no one is seeking. No one is seeking to know what is clear in the heavens above or in the moral law that is written on the heart. So if someone were to go toward universalism, they would go toward universalism. That is the idea that God is just, and so he will only hold us accountable to what we can know.
Yeah.
And there's not very much that we can know, and so he's not going to hold people very much accountable. This is going against that. That is the scriptural idea, the biblical worldview, which is saying that, no, you can know not only by the heavens or by the things that are made around you, but you yourself in your own heart.
Yeah, the law is written.
You have
in your
the
heart.
Law written there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that I want to say that the
so that's the moral law, right? That the Clarity Fund moral is law. Seeking to
and that we
teach.
Know it.
Yeah.
And so knowledge is connected to authority.
Mm-hmm.
So the concluding idea is this, that if you claim to know something, you should be able to show it. And we would expect authorities to do that. So if you go in and someone says, I know what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you would say, well, how do you know that? Right? Show me that that's the case.
Yeah.
So if we claim that God is real, if anyone claims God is real, they should be able to show that indeed God is real.
Especially if we need redemption, right? Which assumes the idea of guilt.
And that's a kind of general principle for any knowledge and any authority. Knowledge gives you authority, and if you're in authority, you should be able to show what you claim to know.
Yeah. So the believer is standing in that position of authority.
Yeah.
So they have an obligation.
Or any knowledge claim, right? Any person claiming to know.
Right.
So we want to say we can indeed know that God is real, and knowing him is our highest goal. Thanks for joining me.
Glad to be here. Thanks.